All right, so Ray, between me and you, we have a combined 114 years worth of knowledge. I've been a used car dealer selling cars that are $5,000 and under for 14 years now, and you've been in the industry for over 100 years. But I just wanted to round down, so that's how I got the 114 years. But anyway, so one big thing that we talk about a lot is how predatory the car dealership model is, and what I want to do is give a little inside knowledge of what it looks like from the car dealer side and why is the system set up for it to be so predatory, so sleazy, so shady. In your experience, so what things happen in the car market to make it so easy and to make it so, I guess, greedy is the word for a lot of these car dealers to try to work something over on all these consumers?
I think the first thing is knowledge. You know, typically in these negotiations for cars in the past, at least when I started 100 years ago, you know, the internet didn't exist. And so the customers had very little knowledge. And so the dealers had all the knowledge. And let's face it, what was it in the '70s, the late '60s or early '70s, when the senator from Oklahoma, Senator Monroney, thought, well, shouldn't new cars actually have an MSRP, a manufacturer suggested retail price? So the whole system was set up without that, so that there were no prices on new cars. And the price of that new car was based on the enthusiasm of the buyer. So the more enthusiastic the buyer was, the higher the damn price was. The less enthusiastic, the lower the price. And when you have a selling situation like that, that is inherently unfair because only one side has information, it tends to attract some of the sleaziest, greediest human beings on the face of the planet. And this industry as a whole has done that for a very, very long time. Now, there's obviously more dealers today that are trying to take a slightly different approach and be a tad bit more customer-centric. But yeah, the origins of the industry were just, hey, how excited are you about this car? And salespeople being greedy, you know.
Yeah, and I really feel the way that even salespeople are paid lends itself to set up this kind of predatory environment, because I've never heard of any other pay plan at a new franchise dealership other than commission. When you sell a car, you get paid. You go out and hunt and you get it, and that's going to push people, even the best people in the world, that's going to push people to want to try to get those consumers over the hump and try to sell them something instead of letting the car actually sell itself.
I worked with a salesperson at one time who his theory was that if a customer had a trade-in, regardless of how much we valued that trade-in for, it was less than what the customer wanted. So let's say, for example, the appraiser went out, looked at the vehicle and said, it's worth $10,000. Well, this salesperson was convinced that if he said to the customer, we think it's worth $10,000, the customer is going to say that's not enough. So this salesperson always operated under the premise of, well, if it's $10,000, I'm going to offer you seven, because either way, it's not going to be enough. And at that point, he's negotiating with the customer's money, not the store's money. And so, yeah, salespeople are paid a percent in many cases. Salespeople are paid a percentage of the gross profit. And how can you impact gross profit? You under allow on a trade. You charge more for an item than you should. Whatever it is, you know, salespeople can figure out a way. There are stores today, particularly stores that are negotiation-free stores, where it's market-based pricing, where salespeople are salaried and they can earn some bonuses, but they're salaried to kind of take out the greediness from the deal. You know, because most people, if you give them a pay plan that says you can earn X, if for the more money you make on the deal, you're going to get a bigger share. Well, you know, you're looking out for you. You're not looking out for the customer.
Yeah, and they're going to try to pull as much money out of that customer as possible for the dealership so they get that percentage off of it. And yes. I can tell you guys that for the used car system is the way that it's set up. It leads itself to be very predatory because of the time clock that's put on a lot of these used car dealers the second that they actually buy a car. A lot of people don't know, but used car dealers, for the most part, don't actually own their inventory. They finance all their inventory. So they do what's the equivalent of swiping a credit card and put it on what's called a floor plan. And each month that they don't sell that vehicle, they have to pay extra interest. Just like if you don't pay your credit card off at the end of the month, well, you have that interest that you have to pay at the end of the month. Same thing with a car sitting on dealer lots. So because this time clock is on these used car dealer backs, I mean, a lot of them are small used car dealers just like myself. They might not have a sales staff. So mm-hmm. It's on them to move that car within that time period so they don't have to pay a lot of interest on that vehicle. So that means when you walk up on their lot and you looking at that car that might be coming up on that that time rotation for that interest payment, well, they're going to be a little bit more pushy to try to get you in that vehicle, because if you don't buy that vehicle, even if someone buys it a month from now, they know it's going to cost them more a month from now to sell it than it is to sell it to you right now.
And the truth of the matter is, the value of that vehicle is going down every day, especially a used car. What you buy it for today isn't necessarily what it's going to be worth 30 days from now or 45 days from now. It is a continually depreciating product. So if you buy it for $1,000 today and it continues to depreciate at, say, the rate of $150 every month, well, if you don't sell it within 30 days, what you invested $1,000 in is now only worth $850. And the value is going to keep going down. So yeah, it's imperative for on used cars in particular to sell them, to turn them as quickly as you possibly can, because it's a continually depreciating asset. The longer you wait, the higher your costs become, especially if you're financing your inventory.
And I can tell you the easy way that my dealership actually combats this predatory nature, where I feel like I want to put my salespeople in a position to not sell a particular car, but I want the cars that we buy to sell themselves, is just like this. Fly Chomper Fly is asking, Brandon, are your salespeople salaried or commissioned? And they thought that my salespeople were salaried. And yeah, they make a salary. And we do set up where if we sell a lot of cars, I still want my salespeople and my whole team to be able to make more money when they're making me more money. So the way that we do it is every 100 cars that we sell at our dealership, the whole team gets a bonus. I don't care if they're selling cars. I don't care if they're fixing cars. I don't care if they're just driving cars to transport them back and forth from the auction and never even touch the sales process. If my business is winning, I want them to win too. So there's a delicate line where we have to walk, where it's not necessarily connected to one particular sale, so that my sales staff is not trying to sell, okay, one car, we need to sell it today, and I need to get that money now so I can get it on my paycheck. We do it over the course of the 100 cars that are sold to make it a better environment for both my customer and my sales staff, where they don't feel like they're going out there and having to hunt and then they're going to starve if they don't sell anything.
Which is, you know, really it is a team effort. It's not an individual effort. And I used to always tell salespeople, you know, as a salesperson, it's like an individual effort that has a team that supports it, you know, and I remember at most new car dealerships, department heads are paid based off of what their department does. Okay, the new car manager gets paid off the profit that the new car department generates, plus what the finance office might generate. the used car manager gets paid off of what the used car department generates plus what F&I generates. Parts manager gets paid off of parts. Service manager gets paid off of service. And I worked for one general manager who thought to himself, well, wouldn't it all work better if everybody had a vested interest in everybody else's department? And so we had a pay plan that as the new car manager, I got some compensation based on what the parts department did as far as internal parts sales. So what are internal parts sales? Those are sales that where the new car department said, I'd like to put X, Y, and Z on this vehicle or that vehicle, whatever it is. And whatever the profit on that internal repair was, I would receive part of that. And what it did is it encouraged every manager, every department manager to be concerned with what was going on in each department, because the better each department did, the better each manager did as a whole. It made perfect sense to me to do it that way. And I was ever grateful that I worked for a GM that saw that it was a combined team effort. It's not just every individual fiefdom. It worked better when I wanted parts to do extremely well. I wanted service to do extremely well, because the better they did, the more I made. Just kind of sort of made sense to me.
Well, I mean, we even have that, say, a similar type of dynamic with the system that we have set up. Because, like, even like Jose, he drives our cars. That's just about all Jose does. Every once in a while, if we get super, super busy, he'll throw a tag on for a customer or something if we give him one. But his job is to drive cars. That's what he does. But he even keeps track of the amount of cars that we're selling each and every day, because he knows at 100 days, I mean, 100 sales. Cars, then, yeah, he'll get his bonus. And we have, like, a little party for him, too. We do, like, a big bonus lunch. And so he keeps up with that, and he's excited about sales, even though he's not touching sales. I think a lot of companies would benefit, especially dealerships, would benefit over having their team being able to try to work with, everybody work together to try to get more money into the dealership or sales into the dealership. And you can take some of that individualistic sharkiness out of it.
I remember at the mini dealership I was at, when a car would need four tires, the mechanic would recommend it needs four tires. The parts manager, and at that dealership, it was every department was siloed. Whatever that department made, that's how you got paid. So sales only got paid off of what sales did. So the parts manager always wanted to put original equipment tires on. The profit margin built into those was higher for him than if we went out and we bought a less expensive set. So in that environment, you could see where the parts manager really didn't care how it might impact the sales department. He didn't care at all. He only cared about how it impacted his department. And when you do that, what happens is managers don't work together for the betterment of the store. Managers only work individually for the betterment of their individual department. That typically doesn't bode well for your customers, because the parts manager was equally as greedy as the salesperson, at least in my mind, the whole idea was to develop a strong customer base that always wanted to do business with you. My rant always was, it's cheaper to keep your existing customers than it is to go out and replace them. So let's do things that would encourage our customers to come back as opposed to discarding them. And pay plans have a lot to do with whether or not that's going to work. And if the pay plan is, every department is siloed, then, you know, you just want to, the parts manager wants to steal from the used car department. You know, the service manager wants to charge full retail on everything that they do. And so everybody just fights everybody instead of everybody pulling together for the betterment of the store.
So can you break down, like, I've been a car dealer, but I've never actually been in car sales myself. I've never worked on commission selling cars. Yes. Can you break down how pay actually works for a used car sale? Well, you walk into a Toyota dealership, you buy a Toyota. Can you break down how that salesperson is actually making money?
Well, typically every store, every new car franchise dealership, for their new car sales and used car sales, has what's known as a PAC. Now, what the PAC is it could be $300 per car, it might be $500, it might be $1,000 per car. And that is an extra amount of money that is applied to the cost of the vehicle to cover certain expenses, maybe advertising expenses, whatever. It doesn't cover reconditioning, just covers advertising and things like that. So let's say we bought a car for $10,000, and there was a $1,000 used car PAC. And the salesperson sells the car for $13,000. So you're thinking to yourself, okay, there's a $3,000 profit, but there's a $1,000 PAC. So the PAC comes off of that $3,000 profit, and the salesperson gets paid on the remaining $2,000. And, you know, they might get 20% or 25%. If it's 20%, it's $400 commission. If it's 25%, it's a $500 commission. But there was $1,000 that was uncommissionable that just basically goes back to the dealer, principal. Doesn't go to the sales manager, doesn't go to the parts manager, doesn't go to the finance manager, goes to the dealer. And so typically pay plans are usually somewhere between 20 and 30%. And you can hit bonus levels where that percentage might increase. Maybe when you do 10 cars, it jumps from 20 to 25%. If you do 15 cars, it jumps from 25 to 30% retroactive back to the first car. That's typically what pay plans looked like on the sales side of things way back when. And when I say way back when, you know, that might have been 10, 15 years ago.
So I know in a lot of cases, especially with new vehicles, there will be no profit on the front end. So what happens in those situations with the payment for the salesperson?
It's a minimum commission. Some stores, the minimum commission would be $100. Other stores, it might be $150 or $200. During COVID times, when dealers were charging $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 in additional dealer markup, guess who didn't get paid off of that additional dealer markup?
I got to guess.
If your guess was the salesperson, you were correct. You know, the salesperson might have gotten paid off of whatever the profit was from invoice to MSRP, but whatever that additional dealer markup was, they weren't getting paid on that because the dealership principal's thinking was, we were going to sell that car anyway. It didn't take a salesman to sell it. Right. So,
what about the back office? What about F&I? How do they get paid?
F&I usually gets a percentage of the gross profit that they produce in finance and insurance product sales. Might be 10%, might be 12%. Could grow even more, because what they'll do is they'll have, let's say it starts at 10% of whatever profit they produce on a given deal, but they have threshold barriers that they need to try and hit percentage-wise as to how many extended warranties they sell, or how many gap insurance policies they sell, or how many dent and ding policies they sell, whatever it is. So if the percentage that they get paid goes from, say, 10 to 12%, if they hit 70% a service contract penetration, well, you better believe towards the end of the month that if somebody, a finance manager, is one or two service contracts away from hitting an extra 2%, they'll give those service contracts away in order to be able to do that. And then there could be another percent or 2% based on other products that were sold. So, yeah, they typically have a base percentage and then an increase in percentages based on penetration of product sales.
So
they are, just so you know, typically in many dealerships, they are the second highest paid employee after the GM.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, they're peddling a bunch of junk that's high margin. That's what that means.
Well, yes. Yeah. And literally, good F&I people are typically the second highest paid people in a dealership.
So I know. So last year, my wife and I, we went and bought her a brand new Honda Odyssey.
Yes.
And I remember going through that F&I office, and there had to be 30 things that dude tried to sell us. And we bought her van for cash. We wrote the check before we even walked into the F&I office.
They hate that.
And oh yeah, so he made zero money off us. But it's just he had to be so mad, because he was going through every one of these screens. And I don't know if he had to, but he kept going through them a little bit faster towards the end. But I said, yeah, all this stuff looks great. Yeah, I mean, I've already wrote the check, though. So if you want to throw it in with this money, then you can. But I'm not paying anymore. So he probably didn't like us very much.
Well, they don't like you for that, because it negatively impacts the percentage of penetration that you're trying to hit. And typically, when somebody's written a check already, either they didn't bring another check with them, and even if they did, they're not whipping out a second check for the additional items. So, yes, the finance managers, as a rule, hate a cash buyer who has already written out the check before they ever walk into the finance office. They hated you with an unbelievable passion.
So how does the sales – so do the finance managers – do they talk to the salespeople and say, okay, here's how you set it up to get them back to me so this doesn't happen? Or is the salesperson in charge of trying to kind of finagle it where, okay, I'm not already walking back there with the check? Because the salesperson told me, okay, yeah, we'll take your check, go ahead and write it, whatever. And then when we got back there, we were ready to go. What's the dialogue? Because that F&I manager probably came out to our salesperson and been like, man, you didn't give me any line here. I had nothing to do.
Typically, when the customer says, "Well, what's the total out the door price?" and you give them the price, and they go, "Okay, well, I'll write the check." The salesperson is supposed to say, "Do me a favor, wait till you get into the finance office to write the check. You know, I could be off a dollar here or a dollar there. So please, he'll
$3,500 for your extended warranty and your gap insurance."
Well, you know, it's you can get somebody who's paying cash or writing a check to buy some of these items if they haven't already written the check.
Yeah.
So, and then one of the other things that a salesperson's supposed to do is they're supposed to set up the customer for when they go into the finance office. Now, you remember when we were going over all the numbers and everything, I mentioned to you that we have some products that could be available that might be of interest to you that can be tailored to the way you drive. Or just keep an open mind when you go back there, and because by law, they have to go over this stuff with you. And the by law, they have to go over this stuff with you is not entirely a lie, because...
Because, it's close.
Well, if they don't go over it with you, then somebody could say, well, you know, I would have bought that extended warranty had it been offered to me after their car blows up. They would say that, and they would sue the dealership, and they would win. So part of the compliance issues became here's the menu of items that are available to you. I need you to initial that these things were offered to you and you chose to decline them. That way, when that person's car blows up, they can't sue the dealership and say, well, I would have bought that extended warranty if I knew it was available, especially when you can pull out the form that says, here's the price of that warranty. There's your initials declining it. So it's not a lie when they say, legally, we need to go over this stuff with you, because they have to protect themselves to that degree. Because I don't want you to think there's ever been a customer that has tried to take advantage of a dealership. And I don't want you to think that there's never, ever been a salesperson or dealership personnel that have never tried to take advantage of a customer. There's this, like, it's a mutual hate society. And everybody figures that they have to get over on somebody.
So I know I get this all the time. I'm a used car dealer and I'm on YouTube and I get comments all the time. Well, Brandon's a shady used car dealer. You shouldn't listen to anything that he says without even listening to a word I've said yet. I get that comment before they even watch the video. Yeah. I know you get the same thing. You've been in the car industry for however long, 128 years.
Yes.
So I know you get those same kind of comments, but what things did you do differently? And I know for a fact you did things differently than what most car dealerships do, but what things can you point out that you did differently over your career that doesn't match that shady kind of car dealer stuff that people just are accustomed to hearing?
Yeah, I mean, I get it all the time. You know, you spent 43 years ripping people off and now you're trying to atone for your sins. Well, no, I didn't have to spend 43 years ripping people off. I accommodated people when they wanted to buy something and I gave them reasons to buy it. But I also talked people out of buying things because it wasn't in their financial best interest to do so. I can't tell you how many times I would counsel a customer as to why this didn't make good financial sense to move forward at this particular point in time. You're only going to make the situation worse if you take the negative equity you have now and roll it into your next loan. Let's think about this a little more before we just agree to do it. It doesn't make the best sense to you or for you. When I worked in F&I, I would give the person the option. I would explain what I thought was the value, and either the customer saw the value or they didn't. I didn't hound them over it. Either you saw value in it or you didn't. I worked at a dealership one time, my first day there as a closer. I got there at 8 o'clock in the morning. Okay. We were open from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. 13-hour day. My first day, I get there at 8 a.m. We have a finance manager that just wouldn't take no for an answer. I left there my first day at 12:30 in the morning. Okay? Why? Because the customer said, I don't want it. Natalie kept saying, you do. After 3 hours or 3.5 hours, the customer said, okay, I'll take it. Okay. Sign the paperwork. And then guess who had to be back in the store at 8 o'clock the next morning? Okay. Might've been me. And guess who else was usually there shortly after that? The customer who Natalie wouldn't leave alone, saying, I didn't want to buy this stuff last night. And I still don't want to buy this stuff now. I want you to take it off the damn contract. So when I worked, I didn't want to be that way. Okay. I didn't want people to buy something out of self-defense just so I could stop selling them. I didn't want them to say yes, just will you stop if I say yes? Oh yes, I will. Yeah, that's not creating value. That's creating animosity. So I did a lot of things. You know, I tried to change the industry as much as I could in tiny little bits at every dealership that I worked at, as to how we provided information to customers, what information we would provide, the steps to the sale, We would do it at the customer's pace as opposed to at our pace, whatever it is. I wanted to make it more customer centric, but that was me.
Yep. But forever we will be labeled as shady car dealers. So,
oh, absolutely. Don't ever forget it. I think on your business card, it should say brand
shady car dealer.
Shady car dealer.
Yeah. You know what? That's actually what it says.
Good. Good. Maybe you should change it. Change the name to Shady Used Car Sales.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder how well, I wonder if that would just stop sales altogether. If you just, if a car dealership is opened up and said, Shady Used Car Dealer. That's the name of the of the car dealership.
Yeah. I mean,
if I had $2,500 cars though, I'd still sell them, I bet.
Well, you know, the what I would do is I would just have like a lot of trees at the lot, a lot of shade trees. And, oh, and that's why we call it Shady Used Car Sales.
Yeah. Yeah, great marketing idea. Let's try that next. That's our next business venture.
Yeah.
All right, Ray. Thanks for being here. Same time next week.
Yes, next week. Now, the 9th of September, I cannot be here on Tuesday the 9th. I'll actually be on a train to D.C., so I apologize in advance, just so you know.
All right, well, I'll schedule a tee time for that day so I can go play golf.
Absolutely, you should.
I got a tee time here in an hour and 10 minutes, so let's get off here so I can go hit some balls before I go.
Go warm up at the range. Go have fun. Yeah.
All right. See you guys later.
See everybody.